Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Greetings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, the Alpine Avalanche, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading from the Big Bend Sentinel. Local coronavirus testing yields smooth operations, modest turnout, and still pending results. Abby Perot, April 29th, 2020. Martha, when the governor announced a program of temporary drive-through testing sites across Texas and dispatched 1,200 members of the Texas National Guard to carry out the mission last week, some were glad to see Martha, Presidio, Alpine, and Terlingua included. Local doctors and government officials have often cited the lack of available testing when talking about the zero confirmed cases of coronavirus in the Tri-Country. It is why they presume there may be undiagnosed cases in the area. Judge Cinderella Guevara called the local testing a proactive defense of public health for the entire community when she announced last week's testing dates. She had heard about it from the governor's office late Tuesday night, giving the local counties just over 3 days to set up and let residents know when, where, and how to get tested. A hotline soon sprung up, and residents were told to call and provide information about symptoms in order to get an appointment. But, as the Big Bend Gazette first reported, those on the other end of the line were providing inaccurate information to some, confusing an already rapid rollout. Judge Guevara was told there would be somewhere around 75 tests at each of the four sites. On Saturday, 64 residents in Martha were tested and 51 in Alpine. The next day, with fewer hours of testing, 42 were tested in Presidio and 26 in Terlingua. This is a good turnout, Mayor John Hughes remarked last Thursday morning outside the USO in Martha. Their group of guardsmen had been in Van Horn the day before, from noon to 5. They had 18 people turn out. In Martha, they had already tested 20 residents by 11 a.m. The leftover tests from Van Horn had been brought to Martha, increasing their total available tests from the 75 tests previously announced. Though the guardsmen that the Big Bend Sentinel spoke to had never performed medical operations, they were glad to be able to contribute and ran their operation tidily. They drove to West Texas from their base in Fort Worth, coming from various roles in aircraft maintenance, piloting, transportation, and dental services. This is totally out of our job description, but we're loving every minute of it, said Chief Master Sergeant Trey McKinney. Even with smooth operations from the Guard, the hangup was in getting the word out. We are getting better at this. We are streamlining processes, Hughes said. But it's a small community. People are nervous. People don't know what it is. People don't know where to call. It's a lot of barriers to entry, so we want to knock down those barriers. Presidio County Emergency Management Coordinator and Martha Fire Chief Gary Mitch and Martha EMS Director Bert Lagarde were on the sidewalk, soliciting residents to take advantage of the opportunity to be tested. They were pretty lenient here in Martha, because anyone who wanted to get tested got tested, Lagarde said after the event. The fire chief and myself were standing out there saying, hey, go get tested. Lagarde and Mitch also encouraged their own emergency response staff to get tested, even without symptoms, due to their regular contact with local residents and the infirm. There were plenty of tests available, and a good number were left over when the drive-through site closed down on Saturday evening. For those who did take the chance, it started with a call. Those who wanted to be tested provided personal information and answered a series of questions on the hotline about whether or not they had various symptoms. While the state had said two symptoms should be exhibited, in Martha, none were required. Callers were then given an appointment, though if the line was empty, there was no need to wait for an appointment. We need you to have an appointment so we can put you in the system, Major Hughes explained. If we were rolling heavy through here, that system would work. But our thorough put in small towns. We just want whatever's beneficial for the people, he said. They adjusted operations to let callers proceed through even before appointment times. After calling, the person getting tested pulled into the alley north of the USO. Pressing their Texas ID or driver's license to the window, an officer read off their details into a walkie-talkie. The car window stayed up, and a guardswoman gestured the patient on to the second station. Another guardsman, in full-body personal protective equipment, had the patient crack a window, pushing a COVID-19 pamphlet through. Folded inside was a Kleenex and a face mask. The patient being tested was instructed to blow their nose and put on the mask. At the last station, the patient's nostrils were swabbed, reaching all the way back to scrape against the tissue between the nose and mouth. It's 10 seconds out of your entire day, so I promise it's not bad, the last guardsman said before administering the test. The guardsman swiped one swab in the left nostril, then another in the right, as the patient tilted their head far back, still seated in their vehicle. That was it. From there, tests were kept in coolers, later whisked away by highway patrol or game wardens who would carry them swiftly to state labs. The paper the patient received explains, "You have been swabbed for the novel coronavirus, COVID-19. Complete test results are expected 24 to 48 hours from the time your specimen was taken. In some cases, the wait can be up to 72 hours. Lagarde said he attended a Zoom discussion with Dr. Edka Escobar this week, who said test results might take a little bit longer because of the sheer number of tests arriving at labs. The EMS director hasn't received his results as of Wednesday, 4 days or over 96 hours since his test. Neither has his staff or other patients with whom the Big Bend Sentinel spoke. In addition to the state providing results to individuals, Judge Guevara said she will be immediately notified by the state, Texas State Department of State Health Services if any positive tests come up. Thus far, she has not heard anything. The Big Bend Sentinel. Officials banned rentals to visitors, but not all complied. By Stephen Paulson, April 29, 2020. Tri-County. Local orders limiting short-term rentals were meant to keep visitors from flocking to this sparsely populated region during the coronavirus pandemic. But talk to Minnie and Marfa, and they'll tell you they're still seeing new faces in town. Take Melly Payan, an assistant manager at the Stripes on East San Antonio Street in the heart of Marfa, who says she's still seeing a steady stream of non-locals coming into the store. "Actually, there's been more out-of-town people," she says. "It's crazy." Out of curiosity, Payan and her coworkers have started asking new customers where they're coming from. They get answers from all over the state and country, including Austin and California. For Payan, an essential worker, the number of visitors has been striking, especially while many Marfa residents have closed businesses, lost jobs, and are sheltering at home. "I don't even think they care," she said of visitors defying local orders and arriving during the coronavirus pandemic. "I don't think they take it seriously." Across the country, bars, restaurants, and other service businesses have closed or switched to go-to service to comply with local orders meant to slow the spread of coronavirus. And leaders in the Tri-County have gone further than most, imposing rules that ban rentals to most visitors. In a region that runs on tourism, those rules have caused tensions between public officials and business owners. In Brewster County, the owner of the Gage Hotel in Marathon sued after officials ordered his hotel to temporarily close. And in Marfa, public officials expanded the rules to also halt the letting of long-term rentals to out-of-town people after they said hosts were continuing to solicit renters from outside the Tri-County. In the expanded order from earlier this month, officials cited visitors who see Marfa as a safe haven to ride out the COVID-19 panic and the use of escape to Marfa during COVID-19 type advertising by local rental owners. What controversies like this miss, though, is that some rental owners aren't just bending or fighting against the rules. They're breaking them all together. An investigation by the Big Bend Sentinel earlier this month found at least three Airbnbs were still listing availabilities in apparent violation of the emergency orders. But since these rentals have been acting in violation of local officials, and therefore without oversight, an exact count of MARPA visitors arriving in violation of emergency orders may never be known. Still, after receiving a tip from a resident, the Big Bend Sentinel was able to track down one company that's continued to flout county rules, a company with ties to a major Dallas area investor named MARPA Property Group, LLC. Headquartered in a house in Fort Worth, MARPA Property Group owns at least two properties in the MARPA area, one in MARPA proper, the other in South Presidio County. Airbnb listings for both properties have shown bookings in April, when all rentals in the area were ostensibly closed to all except essential workers. The properties have three reviews from this month. "Great and quiet location," wrote Gretchen from Austin, adding that the property was perfect for a last-minute stay. The house where Gretchen stayed near East 1st Street and North Spring Street is described as a perfect MARPA retreat on Airbnb. It's owned by MARPA Property Group, according to Presidio County property records. State business records, meanwhile, show the company is headquartered in Fort Worth and is registered by Michael Bernard. And though business registration doesn't always show who runs a company, businesses can, for example, hire a lawyer to register for them. In this case, that name matches Airbnb listings, where the host is named as Michael. Both the name and photo match up with prominent investor in the Dallas area, a man Fort Worth Weekly described in 2009 as a wealthy Fort Worth real estate developer who owns property all over town. He owns so much property that by 2018, he and another investor owned a big chunk of an entire neighborhood in Fort Worth, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram reported that year. Barnard did not respond to a request for comment. Using Airbnb profile photos, the Big Bend Sentinel was able to link one renter, Gretchen, to other social media accounts. When reached for comment, Gretchen was apologetic. Although she'd heard about MARPA's visitor ban, she said she didn't know the rules were in effect. "I had no idea the orders were still in place," she said. "I wouldn't have looked into booking anything otherwise." Neither Airbnb nor her host told her about the rules, she said. She visited MARPA from April 19th to April 21st. Airbnb says it sent out notices to both hosts and prospective renters in MARPA, warning them their holiday plans could run afoul of local emergency rules. "We are contacting you because you have an Airbnb listing in MARPA, Texas," read one message to hosts, which the company shared with the Big Bend Sentinel. "We sincerely apologize for the inconvenience, but appreciate your support in ensuring compliance with these regulations as local governments address COVID-19 public health concerns." By press time, Airbnb did not provide documentation that it had sent a notice to Barnard or MARPA Property Group specifically. Still, a spokesperson stressed that the message was sent to all local hosts. When asked what the company was doing about hosts that didn't comply, the spokesperson said Airbnb preferred working with cities on a one-on-one basis to find solutions as opposed to taking more unilateral measures, including temporarily suspending listings or shutting down rental calendars. In part, the spokesperson said, "That's because the patchwork of local, state, and federal rules have made it harder to generalize what exactly officials expect of the online rentals company." In some places like Quebec and the United Kingdom, Airbnb has calendar-blocked listings to prevent renters from booking rooms in violation of emergency orders. But in those places, top-down orders have made it 100% clearer what officials expect from the company, the spokesperson said. In an interview on Monday, Steve Marquez, MARPA police chief, said that while authorities have had to contact some property owners about the emergency rental rules, locals have followed the rules after getting a warning. "So far, nobody's taken it to the point to where they've been repeat offenders," he said. "We've given them a warning, and then we never see them again." When the Big Bend Sentinel told Marquez about the Marfa property group on Monday, he drove over to check the unit, but he didn't see any apparent visitors. An Airbnb calendar suggested that no one was renting at that time. Even before the coronavirus, Marfa had been taking steps to better regulate and tax the city's many Airbnbs, even going so far as hiring a company last year to help with the process. But in Barnard's case, his rental appears to have flown under the radar and isn't on city lists of Airbnbs, Marquez said. As far as I know, those are supposed to be apartments, Marquez said of the property. Whoever owns it now may not have registered. The Big Bend Sentinel. New Capri Cookbook Showcases Flavors of Marfa. By Stephen Paulson, April 29th, 2020. Marfa. When the Capri restaurant opened a few years back, it didn't take long for photographer Douglas Friedman to become a regular. It's no secret that I'm a huge, huge fan of the Capri, Friedman said in an interview this week. Friedman, who has a background in architecture and portrait photography, he's photographed the likes of Hillary Clinton, was determined to give the Capri's fashionable and farm-to-table meals the art photo treatment. I said, please let's do a cookbook. We have to do a book. The food here is too beautiful. Virginia Lieberman and Rocky Barnett, the husband and wife duo behind the Capri, agreed with the plan. With the crew of around 10 people, they soon began the multi-year and painstaking process of making the cookbook, a process made harder not only by the seasonality of the Capri menu, but by Marfa's remote location where photo crews aren't always in plentiful supply. The result, Cooking in Marfa, is now available for pre-order from Fiden, the art-centric publishing house that's releasing the book. Welcome, the cover reads, practically oozing with down-home charm. We've been expecting you. As art lovers and foodies surely know, getting a publishing deal with Fiden is no small feat. The glamorous publishing house is known for its meticulously designed guides to food and art, including The Silver Spoon, Fiden's massive encyclopedia of Italian cooking. More remarkable still is the fact that Fiden would choose an individual restaurant to showcase in a cookbook. Most of the company's books instead showcase broader genres of themes from Thai food to modern architecture. These facts were surely on the mind of Capri owner, co-owner Virginia Lieberman when Friedman approached her about the prospect of making a Fiden cookbook. I thought he was wonderfully crazy, she said. I was totally on board. But the group nonetheless decided to put together a proposal, and then Fiden said yes. They called right away to our astonishment, Lieberman said. For Friedman, who was determined from the outset to get the book published with Fiden, the pairing made sense. Fiden is known, among other things, for its full-page color photos, which Friedman thought could do justice to the elegant plating at Capri. And while some cookbook publishers stick to recipes, Fiden's books are known for having long narrative passages, another detail that Friedman just thought made sense for Capri. After all, he said, Lieberman is a natural storyteller. You can literally sit transfixed by Virginia as you sit and watch the ash on her cigarette get longer and longer, he said. Talk with her and Rocky about food, about something as mundane as salt, and the conversation becomes so interesting. Friedman got a good share of fun photo shoots out of the book. He flew in a helicopter to capture an aerial shot of Marfa. He took photos of Lieberman and Barnett on a ranch outside of town. For photos of the food itself, the group built a makeshift photo studio at the Capri, where Friedman leaned heavily on natural light. We chased the light around that room, Friedman recalled. In the morning, we'd be on one end. By the afternoon, we'd be in the farthest corner away. Lieberman, who helped found Ballroom Marfa, first met Barnett after he moved to Marfa in 2008. A chef with a history of working at Michelin-starred restaurants, Barnett started cooking at Ballroom Dinners and opened a restaurant, the Miniature Rooster, where the water stop is today. Surrounded by the landscape of the Chihuahuan Desert, Barnett was fascinated with the question of how people in the region had fed themselves thousands of years ago, and the pair soon decided to open a restaurant exploring those themes. In the years since, Capri has become known for cooking with indigenous ingredients, from mesquite and yucca blossoms to agarita berries. They harvest wild yeast from Mexican elderberry trees to make fermented soda. A botanist from Sol Ross University helped them set up a wildflower garden. In an interview Tuesday, Lieberman had conflicting emotions about the book release. She was excited, she said, but also nervous. She also had mixed feelings about releasing a cookbook while Capri and other restaurants are struggling with coronavirus concerns and emergency orders. But it's also such a nice story, she said, and I think people are craving some access to nice stories at the moment. The Big Bend Sentinel. Ready or not, Texas reopens Friday. By Abby Perot. April 29th, 2020. Texas. Governor Greg Abbott announced Monday that he would allow his stay-at-home order to expire April 30th, introducing a phased reopening plan that begins Friday, May 1st. The reopening plan has called into question the powers of counties and cities to use emergency orders to limit activity during coronavirus. The new mandate also revealed that while the governor said individuals have the ultimate control in their choice to continue to stay home or go out, many will risk losing unemployment if they decide not to immediately return to work at reopened businesses. Notably, the governor said his order supersedes all local orders, putting an end to regulations like those in the city of Presidio that have required residents to wear masks. In the Tri-County, officials have implemented harsher regulations during coronavirus than the state has. Marfa and Presidio County restricted hotels and rentals in emergency orders this April, and now the governments question whether they will be allowed to extend those orders. When coronavirus concerns began, Texas cities and counties took action, ordering residents to stay at home in a patchwork of local ordinances rather than a state mandate. The governor issued a stay-at-home after that, and now that local power is dissipating as the governor supersedes local control with his order. Hotels and motels are not explicitly mentioned in the governor's new orders, something local officials think might still allow them to the power to choose to restrict them if needed. On Tuesday, the governor's office provided a statement to Presidio County's attorney, Rod Ponton, saying, "Hotels and motels have been an essential service, which, per the governor's executive orders, means that local governments cannot restrict them." The Texas Attorney General's office additionally said that restricting short-term rentals like Airbnbs is a violation of private property rights and that hotels cannot be lawfully closed. In a memorandum to county commissioners, Ponton shared his information and recommended county officials let their local orders expire on April 30th. Commissioner Brenda Bentley disagreed, saying, "I feel that allowing the orders to expire would give people the impression that because there are no orders, it's safe and they're free to just go back to life as usual." She called the move dangerous at this point and hoped to implement some orders that do not contradict the governor's in order to let people know we're not out of the woods yet. Presidio County Judge Cinderella Guevara said on Tuesday that she no longer sees a reason for the hotel, motel, and short-term rental restrictions. "At first, we all had this fear and didn't know about the virus or how to prevent it," Guevara said. "With more information available now," she said, "people just need to be responsible. I don't know if we can continue to hurt them economically that way," speaking of the economic hit the local hotel industry has taken during the closure. "I know a lot of people are going to be upset and confused, but I'll go back to the governor's orders that if people want to shelter in place and don't want to go out, they don't have to." As of press time, the county has not formally set a meeting to discuss the expiring orders. The city of Marfa held a meeting at 6 p.m. Wednesday after press time to discuss actions going forward. They will meet again tonight, Thursday, with details for the digital meeting available on the city's website. As for the governor's phased reopening plan, phase one begins on Friday, May 1st. In that phase, the governor emphasizes that vulnerable populations, especially those over age 65, should stay home if at all possible. All retail stores, restaurants, movie theaters, and malls can reopen May 1st. Abbott said of the first phase on Friday. The order also allows museums and libraries to open, as long as hands-on exhibits are closed. This is permission to open, not a requirement, Abbott said, suggesting businesses can stay closed on their own convictions. With individuals no longer required to stay at home, Abbott said they still have ultimate control over their own safety, adding that those who are concerned should use that control. But as businesses reopen, workers will be offered their jobs back, and that comes with consequences. TWC spokesperson Cisco Gomez confirmed that those who choose to continue to exercise their ultimate control and stay home will lose their unemployment if they do not return to their reopened job. If your business is safe and meeting those guidelines and you do not need to go back to work, you will not be eligible for unemployment insurance, Gomez told multiple press outlets. Texas residents, even those who are older or immunocompromised, may have to choose between personal health and paying the bills. Without the security of unemployment payments, many will return to work. For all businesses in Phase 1, Abbott said, on the advice of doctors, occupancy is limited to no more than 25%. He called that limitation a proven business strategy, noting that HEB and Home Depot have used it. But in communities like each of the three Tarrant counties, the state will potentially allow even more capacity to open in businesses. For counties in Texas with fewer than 5 cases recorded, 50% capacity is permitted at businesses. Presidio, Brewster, and Jeff Davis counties meet that provision and may submit a form to the state for approval to open at 50% capacity. On the subject of the more relaxed rules for counties with fewer than 5 cases, Abbott said, if there is an outbreak, it could cause them to revert back to a more limited capacity. Phase 1 allows doctors, nurses, and dentists to return to regular operations with general advice to social distance and take precautions. It allows essential businesses to continue as they have and also expands infectious disease protocols for senior living communities. The first phase does not allow for barbershops, hair salons, bars, or gyms to reopen, though the governor said he hoped to have those up and running by mid-May. That will all depend on the success of Phase 1. If the state sees a bounce in cases after Phase 1 is in effect, that's not enough by itself. Just because there may be an increase in the number of people who test positive, that's not a decisive criteria, Abbott said. The governor said hospitalization rates and death rates also weigh into the calculation of moving to Phase 2. Phase 2 opens more businesses and is scheduled for May 18th, pending any flare-up of cases, hospitalizations, and deaths that would cause the state to reconsider. There's a reason that not all businesses in Texas can open all at once, Abbott said. He cited precautionary tales, like a new growth in cases in certain parts of China and Singapore, experiencing a second wave that is bigger than its first. Defending his decision to reopen at this time, the governor pointed to his recently deployed mobile testing units run by the National Guard, a new contact tracing effort, and an aspirational goal to test 26,000 Texans a day as reasons it is now safer to reopen businesses in the state. It's hard to get rid of this virus because it is so contagious, Abbott said. We're not just going to open up and hope for the best, he told the press. Phases were put into place so we don't have to reopen and have to close down again, and mentioned again that present and future decisions rely on doctors and data. The governor also signed a new executive order on Monday that states, every person who enters the state of Texas as the final destination through an airport from a point of origin or a point of last departure in the following state of California, state of Connecticut, state of New York, state of New Jersey, state of Washington, city of Atlanta, Georgia, city of Chicago, Illinois, city of Detroit, Michigan, or city of Miami, Florida, shall be subject to mandatory self-quarantine for a period of 4 days from the time of entry into Texas or the duration of the person's presence in Texas, whichever is shorter.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read additional articles from the Big Bend Sentinel on Thursday, April 30th. Facing losses, Sol Ross and its students will split $1.8 million in federal funds. by Abby Perot, Alpine. Texas received a staggering $1 billion out of the $14 billion Congress allocated to higher education in the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security CARES Act. For local Sul Ross State University, their share of the Texas pie will amount to $1.8 million. These federal funds will be a lifeline for schools to survive the revenue losses that occurred when the pandemic closed down higher education institutions suddenly this March. When Sul Ross shut its doors, students needed housing refunds, distance learning fees mounted, fundraising events and sports games were canceled, and the school was left to figure out the bill, according to Chris Clifford, the school's vice president for budget and finance. In a call early this week, Clifford said the $1.8 million will be divided in half, with roughly $900,000 going to emergency student aid and the other half to institutional recovery. A committee with representation from student life, student accounting, and financial aid was formed, with the hopes of getting funds into students' hands as soon as they can to help with their intermediate needs due to the coronavirus. Clifford said seniors who had to leave campus will be refunded for housing and meal plans. For the majority of students, a credit will be applied for future dining and housing when they hopefully, eventually, return to campus. At least part of the other half, the institutional recovery funds, will be used to offset the distance learning fee that is charged for online courses. The school has also lost money due to study abroad cancellations and income from the softball and baseball season. As far as tuition, classes continued, so there were no refunds for coursework or fees, Clifford said. Students have continued their education through the turbulent changes, with many hoping to still graduate on time. Speaking of losses, Clifford said, the biggest one is the loss of graduation. We've felt that personally and feel so much empathy for students that aren't getting to walk in a normal ceremony. The school is devising alternate celebrations, like having students submit photos to be featured in some way. Beyond this semester's losses, the school is forecasting a negative trend in terms of higher education enrollment overall. Clifford said that those losses are not going to be covered by the $900,000 that the institution has from the federal government. We're part of the Texas State University system, and all the institutions are expecting impact from this. Enrollment and possible state appropriation impact. The state is going to be looking at its resources, he said. Given what's happened with oil, too, and a slowdown of the economy as we've shut down, it's certainly not going to be helping our state funding. Higher education institutions in Texas are waiting on word from the state about when and how to safely reopen campuses. We miss everyone and can't wait to get back to normal operations. It'll probably be a phased opening over time as things ease up and we can do it safely with everyone's best interest in mind. In the meantime, the university announced a new relief fund to assist students who are currently struggling financially due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Students who have lost work during the outbreak are eligible for the funding, which can be used to purchase basic necessities. The funds cover essential items like toilet paper, soap, food, meals for students staying in the dorms and apartments, personal protective equipment for those who need to leave their dorms, and other items that may be necessary to complete the semester. Lack of transportation has been problematic for some remaining students who may need help getting home at the end of the semester. And Kara O'Shaughnessy, Director of Advancement and Donor Relations, said monies raised from the fund will help alleviate some of those issues. They're not able to get essential items in town or go home with the travel restrictions in place throughout the U.S., she said. That's where the fund can play a huge role in making sure these students won't lack the basic living items, and they will still be able to concentrate on their studies. The Sul Ross Relief Fund is one way that we can help address their immediate needs, said Dr. Yvonne Relavasquez, Assistant Vice President for Administration and Development. Your gift will help Sol Ra students finish the semester and show them how much we all care about their success. Currently, the university has $5,000 in matching funds. Property taxes head for a very large increase this year. Presidio County. The State Comptroller Property Value Study continues to be a problem for the Presidio County Appraisal District and the citizens of Marfa. Results of the 2019 value study were recently released, showing that Marfa ISD failed the study again. This issue continues to be a contentious one, with local taxpayers continuing to express outrage at the high values, while local sales indicate that the appraisal district is still not up to the required values of law. State law requires the standard of market value, and each school district in Texas must appraise within 5% of that calculated number, or the local school loses state funding. Because Marfa is considered a rich district due to high home values, Marfa actually pays recapture amounts back to the Texas Education Agency. Richard Petrie, a consultant hired by the board to try to fix the problems of the district 5 years ago, is proposing a very large increase for 2020 to meet the market value standard. The average home value is increasing 58%, and small tracts of land and town lots are increasing almost 50% due to the sales data that was discovered by the state. The only positive part of this news is that homesteads in Marfa are protected from any increase greater than 10%, so those taxes will only rise that amount. Over 65 homesteads are capped for school taxes, protecting them from any increase. Of the $83 million increase, almost $43 million is protected from taxation by the cap on homesteads. 317 homesteads are also protected from any increase because of the freeze on school taxes for the disabled and elderly. Petrie stated, "I know this is going to be really difficult, especially considering that the virus issue may negatively impact values going forward. But we are required to use the assessment date of January 1st as the value date. The disaster provision in the tax codes does not allow us to consider how this epidemic will impact value in Marfa," according to Attorney General Paxton. Presidio ISD will also see an increase in value due to reclassification on most homes and on land values. Taxpayers who have evidence that their values are not at the level estimated are asked to submit that evidence by email. An employee of the district will call each person who protests to share information about the property. If an agreement on value can be reached, no further action will be necessary. If an agreement is not reached, then the appraisal review board will hear the case later in the spring or early summer. It has not been determined at this point whether or not those meetings will be held in person or remotely. Brewster County residents can apply for second round of aid. Brewster County. The Big Bend COVID-19 Pandemic Relief Fund is now ready for round two of providing aid to locals. Applications for the new funding can be found at bigbendaid.org, and the deadline is May 15th. The fund was set up to help Brewster County residents deal with hardships caused by the pandemic, and volunteers from Alpine and Terlingua started the fund through Big Bend Citizens Alliance, a Terlingua-based nonprofit organization. The first round of applications has been processed, and awards are going out. The organization gives special thanks to Porter's, West Texas National Bank, Out West Feed and Supply, and the Big Bend Chamber of Commerce, and offers their sincerest gratitude to everyone who so generously donated. The first round issued funds to 54 qualified individuals and three local nonprofits. The Salvation Army's Alpine Unit made an offer to pay electric, water, and gas bills for the applicants up to $150 each. The Marathon Post Office, Terlingua Crisis Center, West Tex Community Credit Union, and Alpine Community Credit Union are serving as pickup and drop-off locations for printed applications. On Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd, the Big Bend Citizens Alliance and the City of Alpine will present the One-on-One-on-One Live Stream Music Festival, a free two-day fundraising event. The festival highlights both the isolation and the online intimacy that we are all experiencing as artists to share their music with listeners around the region, the state, or even the world. More information can be found at bigbendaid.org. To donate online, visit bigbendaid.org. Checks may be payable to Big Bend Citizens Alliance with Pandemic Relief Fund in the memo field, can be mailed to P.O. Box 202, Terlingua, Texas, 79852, or deposited at West Texas National Bank in Alpine and Terlingua.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Fort Stockton Pioneer. Share your memories of Judge Gonzalez. The Pioneer is asking the community to share its thoughts about former attorney and 83rd District Court Judge Alejandro Ramon Gonzalez, who died April 21st, for a story planned for our May 7th edition. Please send your thoughts and photographs to steve.fountain@fortstocktonpioneer.com by 2 p.m. Monday, May 4th. Free COVID-19 testing May in Ira Ann. Make appointment online or by phone. The Texas National Guard mobile testing teams will be in Ira Ann to offer free COVID-19 testing on Friday, May 8th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Ira Ann Fire Station, 506 West 6th Street. Remember, test results are only as good as the day you are tested. You can be negative for the virus one day and catch it the next. Tests are a diagnostic tool meant to determine if someone needs to be quarantined or receive additional medical attention. It will be done by appointments only, so you must go online or call to begin registration by calling 512-883-2400. That number again is 512-883-2400. Or going to www.txcovidtest.org. Teacher housing construction begins at former Butts school site. Construction of 6 duplexes of teacher housing has begun on the former Butts school property, with the first duplex and garage pads poured this week. The site is bordered by Young, South Valentine, West Gallagher, and West Scherer streets. Each duplex will contain 2 3-bedroom residences to be used by teachers in the district. The duplexes will be built one at a time, starting with the units on the west side. Framing will start soon on the first duplex, with the slab placement and garage following on the next unit. The first duplex is targeted for completion in August. Teacher housing construction begins at former Butts school site. Construction of 6 duplexes of teacher housing has begun on the former Butts school property, with the first duplex and garage pads poured this week. The site is bordered by Young, South Valentine, West Gallagher, and West Scherer streets. Each duplex will contain 2 3-bedroom residences to be used by teachers in the district. The duplexes will be built one at a time, starting with the units on the west side. Framing will start soon on the first duplex, with the slab placement and garage following on the next unit. The first duplex is targeted for completion in August. Businesses need a wear a mask or we're open sign. Download one here and get your What's Open free listing posted today. Remember to create or update your free What's Open listing. business owners, as the restrictions begin to loosen up on you, on your business, be sure you're in position to let people know your hours, address, phone number, and services with a free listing in our What's Open database. Not only is the searchable database available to readers for free at www.fortstocktonpioneer.com, but we also use the information for the What's Open feature on our print and e-editions. The link is https://fortstockton.whatsopenhere.com/. Donut Palace to reopen Thursday. The Donut Palace, 1502 West Dickinson Boulevard, will reopen at 4:30 a.m. on Thursday, April 30th. It will be open daily until noon. Service will be drive-through only. The Donut Palace is one of the local retailers that sell the print edition of the Pioneer for $1. So, in addition to getting donuts, coffee, and kolaches, you can also get a copy of the Pioneer. CDC expands lists of COVID-19 symptoms to include chills, repeated shaking with chills, muscle pain, headache, sore throat, and new loss of taste or smell. Watch for symptoms. People with COVID-19 have had a wide range of symptoms reported, ranging from mild symptoms to severe illness. These symptoms may appear 2 to 14 days after exposure to the virus. Fever, cough, shortness of breath or difficulty breathing, chills, repeated shaking with chills, muscle pain, headache, sore throat, new loss of taste or smell. When to seek medical attention. If you have any of these emergency warning signs for COVID-19, get medical attention immediately. Trouble breathing, persistent pain or pressure in the chest, new confusion or inability to arouse, bluish lips or face. This list is not all inclusive. Please consult your medical provider for any other symptoms that are severe or concerning to you. Call 911 if you have a medical emergency. Notify the operator that you have or think you might have COVID-19. If possible, put on a cloth face covering before medical help arrives.
Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading from the Big Bend Sentinel for the week of Sunday, March 22nd. I'm reading on Thursday, March 26th, 2020.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Monahans News. Telemedicine appointments available through WMH. As business and organizations across the nation adjust their operations to provide better health and safety measures to prevent the spread of COVID-19, Ward Memorial Hospital is implementing new technologies across the local health system's medical clinics. With telemedicine services, your next visit to your medical provider is only a phone call or video chat away. In light of today's health concerns, we are excited to provide our patients with the service they need and the attention they expect, says Leticia Rodriguez, CEO of Ward Memorial Hospital. Our new service allows us to provide remote appointments with our medical providers. Eliminating the need for in-person visits for many of our patients. With telemedicine appointments, patients can visit with medical providers at Sandhills Family Clinic or the Sandhills Family Clinic East over the telephone via video chat. Based on the outcomes of these visits, providers can provide recommendations on next steps. Diagnosing common conditions and prescribing medication is possible with some patients. If lab work and other tests or screenings are necessary, such procedures will be scheduled as appropriate. Our goal is to continue to see patients while practicing the necessary social distancing recommendations set forth by state and federal officials, Rodriguez says. Best of all, our patients will not need to leave the comfort of their homes for a telemedicine appointment. To participate in a live interactive visit with a local medical provider, patients will need a smartphone or computer that have a camera and microphone enabled. According to Rodriguez, appointments are available Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Medicare, Medicaid, and most private health insurance plans are accepted. For more information or to schedule an appointment with a provider from the Sandhills Family Clinic or the Sandhills Family Clinic East, call the Sandhills Family Clinic at 432-943-2068 or the Sandhills Family Clinic East at 432-943-2057. Father Indicted After Kids Test Positive for Meth by Christy Sullivan. A father was indicted in late February on two charges of child endangerment after investigators say his children, all under the age of 9, tested positive for methamphetamine in November of last year. Daniel Ray Marshall, 32, of 1805 West 2nd Street, was charged with abandon, endanger child criminal negligence, a state jail felony. After state Child Protective Services reported Marshall and the children's mother, Michelle Miller, 31, for drug use as well as their children testing positive for illegal narcotics. The grand jury for the 143rd Judicial Court returned the indictment on February 27th. At the time of the arrest, Monahan's Police Department Captain Christopher Quintana said, "The arrest stems from an ongoing Child and Protective Services investigation. CPS representatives brought the positive drug test results for Miller and Marshall's and their three children, ages 9, 3, and 2, to the MPD office, and as a result of the investigation, we were able to obtain arrest warrants for the children's parents and charge them with abandonment, endangered child, imminent danger," he said. As per CPS protocol, the children were removed from the home and placed in their custody. Subsequently, Miller was picked up on November 15th on two warrants for introducing methamphetamine to the system of a child, and after being on the lam, Marshall was arrested on November 26th. Both grand jury indictments state Marshall did engage in conduct that put two of his children in imminent danger of death, bodily injury, or mental impairment by introducing methamphetamine into the child's body. Also, Marshall did not voluntarily get the children any medical attention. Marshall remains in custody at the Ward County Jail in lieu of posting the $42,500 bond. It's not clear if or when Miller will be indicted on the same charges. If convicted, Marshall could face 180 days to 2 years in a state jail facility or a fine up to $10,000 for each charge. Lieutenant Jeremy Kynes was the investigating officer on the case. Obituaries from Monahan's News. Apollonio Sonny Vera Esparza was born to Apollonio and Nasaria Vera Esparza in Kermit on May 30, 1947. Sonny is preceded in death by his parents, daughter Nancy Hagerton and sister Linda Salinas. He is survived by his wife Becky Esparza of Monahans, son Christopher Esparza and wife Maddie of Monahans, two granddaughters, one grandson, one great-grandson, brother Ray Esparza of Odessa, three sisters Nancy Pedraza of Monahans, Gladys Mesa and husband Augustine of Odessa, and Blanca Morrow of Fort Stockton, as well as numerous beloved nieces and nephews. Funeral services will be held in Monahans. The date will be determined. Visit our website, harkeyfunerals.com, to sign the guest book or leave a personal note for the family. Lionel Otho Crisp, born December 13, 1935, on a ranch in southern Menard County, passed away at home on Sunday morning in Lorain, surrounded by family. He is preceded in death by his parents, Mr. Othar Crisp and Mrs. Elizabeth Crisp, his wife of 62 years, Mrs. Earlene Crisp. He is survived by their two children, Mrs. Kathleen Crone and husband Doug of Big Spring, Mr. Neil Crisp and wife Amber of Cisco. There are 13 grandchildren, 33 great-grandchildren, and one expecting. Due to the coronavirus and social distancing guidelines of event limits of 10 people, the graveside service will be streamlined for family and friends. Services are under the direction of Schaefer Funeral Home, Sherwood Way. Monahan's Nurse to Aid COVID-19 Pandemic by Paul Skyfers. A young Monahan's nurse is headed into the epicenter of the COVID-19 pandemic. The 21-year-old Kelsey Mitchell boarded an airplane at 5 a.m. Tuesday morning, bound for New Jersey to help in one of the country's hotspots with the coronavirus epidemic. Based on her strong faith in God, Kelsey said, "I feel like I am being called to help." When she arrives in New Jersey, she will work on the Corona Overflow floor at the John F. Kennedy Medical Center in Edison, New Jersey. She will serve on that floor for a period of 3 months before returning home. New Jersey is one of the hardest hit states in the U.S., with, as of Tuesday, 64,584 cases of coronavirus and 2,443 deaths. The JFK Medical Center is a 499-bed acute care hospital. Asked if she was nervous about the situation, she said, "Of course, but the need for nurses is very high right now, and I want to help. Plus, the experience will be a great asset for the future." At first, she was reluctant to go because of a health concern with a family member. But those concerns turned out to be not as serious as first thought, so she made the decision to go. Her work in New Jersey is through an organization called AYA Healthcare of San Diego, California, an agency that specializes in travel nursing. AYA will provide the airfare, lodging, and salary during her New Jersey tour of duty. Her work with AYA Healthcare fits into her long-term plans of wanting to be a travel nurse. Her LVN license is valid in several other states besides Texas. As part of the Enhanced Nurse Licensure Compact, ENLC, her license is valid in Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Iowa, Kentucky, Maryland, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, New Hampshire, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Utah, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. The need for nurses in New Jersey is so desperate that the licensure requirements have been waived. LVNs in Texas are allowed to do more than most other states, Mitchell said. Getting a license in any other state would just require taking the test per local state requirements. Mitchell plans to continue her nursing education. She has already applied for the Registered Nurse Program at Odessa College in a program titled LVN to RN, and after that she plans to earn her bachelor's degree in nursing. "Beyond that," she said, "I haven't thought much past that yet." The young licensed vocational nurse, LVN, graduated from Monahan's High School in 2017 and then followed that up with her LVN training at the Monahan's campus of the Odessa College Nursing School and earned her license in August of 2019. She has also been active in several youth programs at Southside Baptist Church. After successful completion of the LVN program, she immediately went to work for Ward Memorial Hospital. During her tenure at WMH, her primary duty was with the Sandhills Family Clinic and would float to the emergency room and patient floor as needed. Kelsey resigned her position with the clinic in order to undertake this challenge. Ward Memorial Hospital CEO Leticia Rodriguez said, "Kelsey is a good nurse and is very eager to learn. She learned more than some others because of her cross-training in the ER and the hospital floor. We would certainly consider rehiring her when she returns." The WMH Facebook page acknowledged her efforts by stating, "Kelsey will start her work in New Jersey on April 15th and will be there for 13 weeks. Ward Memorial Hospital staff sends her well wishes and prayers." Kelsey is the daughter of Brian and Kelly Mitchell, siblings and brother, Cody Ornelas, and younger sister, Kylie Mitchell. Bowden given 5 years for drug manufacture and delivery by Christy Sullivan. A wicked man received a 5-year prison sentence for manufacture or delivery of a controlled substance and possession of a controlled substance. Cy Douglas Bowden Jr., 30, of 209 Irving, Wicket, was found to be in possession of more than 4 grams of methamphetamines, but less than 200 grams, with the intent to deliver, a first-degree felony. On January 3, 2019, on March 25, 2017, Bowden was found to be in the possession of 1 gram or more, but less than 4 grams of meth, a third-degree felony. Bowden was sentenced on April 14th after pleading guilty in the 143rd District Court by Judge Mike Swanson to 5 years confinement for each charge in the Institutional Division, Texas Department of Criminal Justice. Bowden will serve these sentences concurrently. He will also pay a fine of $669 in court costs, $360 in restitution, and was credited for 211 days toward his sentence. Bowden was represented by Greg Hawley, and the attorney for the state was District Attorney Randall W. Reynolds.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.